Welcome to the Triple Bottom Line, where we reveal how today's business leaders are reaching a new level of success with a people, planet, profit approach. And here's your host, Taylor Martin.
Welcome, everybody. I have Dave Pechnajek here today. He is here to speak about social purpose, woke capitalism, and greenwashing. But first, a little bit. but first, a little bit about Dave, who's laughing already. He's the CEO of Jump Associates, which is a strategy and innovation firm helping companies grow beyond just making money. Dave is a board of trustees for Conscious Capitalism. He's a trusted advisor to some of the world's most well-known brands like Target, Nike, Universal Music Group, Virgin, and the like. He's also an author, adjunct professor, keynote speaker, and has written for Business Week, Forbes, Fast Company, and more. Dave, great to have you on the show. When you first started out in your career, did you see yourself landing where you are today?
I probably thought I might land here, but for wildly different reasons, right? Isn't that the crux of it, right? I think somewhere in my mid-teens, I knew I wanted to move to California. It was snowy and cold in New York, and I knew I probably wanted to start a company. That seemed like a cool thing. But the reasons why I would do that are wildly different from why I do it today.
Well, tell me why. Let's get into the wildly.
Well, you know, and the real difference is purpose. And it is that big why. I think, you know, when you're 14 years old, 15 years old, you're like, oh, it'd be so cool to start a company someday. Not realizing that a company at its best can be a vehicle for a greater purpose, for a greater cause. That's in the world. You know, I should step back and say, you know, Jump does strategy and innovation work, which is a very niche thing. We help folks figure out how to grow. And in the last 10 years, every single one of our competitors, not most of them, but all of them have either gone out of business or been acquired. Right. And so not surprisingly, then people come knocking on our door, you know, like the big legacy management consultants, and they say, hey, we'd like to buy you too. And, you know, we'll talk to them. We have no desire to be bought. But one of the things we'll tell them in conversations is you need to realize that Jump is more like REI or Patagonia or Starbucks or Whole Foods than it is like Bain or McKinsey or BCG, right? Mm-hmm. And the biggest difference is that purpose, is that greater idea for why we're in business.
Right. So you're purpose driven, and your purpose driven is not going to sell out. You're not looking to be bought out. You're looking to do something with it.
I mean, I can imagine us being acquired if it helped us to increase our impact, right? Jump's purpose is to transform lives through learning and growth. We work with a lot of very large, great companies that are great at doing things, but they're not always great at learning new things. And even societally, we live in a society that hates to learn. We have leaders who are proud about how little they read or how rarely they change their mind. And similarly, we have folks who have a mindset that is a very fixed mindset. They don't have a growth mindset about what people are capable of. So in the midst of that, we have this very, say, countercultural idea that you can transform lives through learning and growth. You can shape how the world moves forward and how we solve the biggest problems that not just companies have, but society has, if you can learn your way out of it. And unfortunately, that is distinctive in 2023.
Yeah, I would say we've been learning how to live and learning how to create a world in which to live in, but we haven't been very thoughtful of it. And that is the whole reason why purpose-driven companies is such a hot topic right now. So let me dive into, from your perspective, what are the top five key characteristics that differentiates a purpose-driven company?
Yeah, and I should say that there are three kinds of companies out there that we see. There are companies that are not purpose-driven companies. God bless them. That is just not their thing. And very successful ones. Amazon is a very successful company. I would argue that it is not a purpose-driven company, and that leads to many of the discontents that we have about Amazon. And then there's the second type of folks. These are the folks who are purpose talking companies. And we can name names there too and talk about ones that they say they have a purpose, but that's maybe just a piece of advertising or a tagline written on the wall. And then there are the companies that are truly shaped by their purpose to be very different from the rest of us, and we can learn from those.
Yeah, like Patagonia.
like Patagonia, like REI, like Ben & Jerry's, even under management by Unilever, right? So what's the difference between companies who say they're purpose-driven and companies that are purpose-driven? And I think right now, having a purpose is a very buzzy thing. It's a very cool thing.
Right.
And when you look at, you know, how they perform, you would look and say being a purpose-driven company doesn't really matter that much. It doesn't change your fortunes in the world, right? We've just seen a couple of studies that have come out that say, you know, the difference between purpose-driven companies and ordinary companies is nil. And I thought about it. I said, how, my colleagues and I jumped. We said, how could that possibly be? And it turns out it's because they don't have a good, you know, mechanism for evaluating whether this company is really purpose-driven. But we've put together actually a scorecard of what makes a truly purpose-driven company. And if you take companies that, you know, on a scale of 0 to 100 who rate at least a 50, let's be generous, above a 50 on our scorecard on 5 big factors, when you look at them, the difference in their performance is massive. It's a couple orders of magnitude beyond the S&P 500. And it's even, they stand out, you know, by a few basis points, even to folks in their own sector. So if you're truly purpose-driven, it actually pays off as being better for your business overall.
So you guys had to go out and find your own metrics to measure a purpose-driven company from basically the standard norm.
We really did. And we found 5 things. Number one, does a company have an activated purpose? Do they have a reason to exist beyond making money that anybody in the company can tell you what it is and it guides decision-making, right? Number two, is there an aligned culture? Is there a set of values and behaviors that you can count on, the people internally and externally can count on that this company is going to show up, you know, in this way? Number three, either a sense of stakeholder centricity. Or is this organization just about providing a return to shareholders, or are they doing right by their employees, their customers, their partners on a win-win basis? And number four, is there any sort of next level leadership development, right? For the best purpose-driven companies, these are places that have to grow a new kind of leader that we haven't seen before. And in the best firms that we see, you know, if you join this organization when you're 22, you have a higher likelihood of being a CEO or a senator or a societal leader when you're 52. And finally, future focus, right? Are you living, you know, week to week or quarter to quarter, or do you have these kind of broader planning systems? You know, the best companies that we see have a vision and a roadmap where they are mapping, you know, 5 or 7 years out as to where they want to be, because this stuff takes time. Right. So those 5 factors together, activated purpose, aligned culture, stakeholder centricity, next level leadership, and future focus, right? You can evaluate, you know, your own organization on those 5 factors, right? And that makes the difference between a company that just has a tagline written on the wall when I walk into your lobby versus one that's truly purpose driven.
Man, I want to dive into each one of those, but the one thing that's really on the top of mind right now after hearing that is when people are coming to you and asking you to help them with the purpose-driven initiatives, do they understand those things? Do you have to like really sit down and educate them in this so that they understand that doing this is actually going to make all bottom lines, you know, the triple bottom line better, that's going to increase profit? Because I feel like when people come into this, they fear that, oh, if we're going to be purpose-driven, we're not going to make money. I mean, how do you overcome that conversation?
That's exactly right. If the choice is, you know, like, well, we're going to have a greater purpose or we're going to make money, we are missing the boat here, right? Because then we're not creating value for all stakeholders, right? Having a purpose, right, should drive, you know, greater value for shareholders and customers and employees and partners, right? It should be win-win-win-win across the board. That is very different from the current conversation around something like ESG. Right. And I don't want to criticize folks who spend their days thinking about ESG, but in too many situations, we see it as, well, we're going to do something that is, let's call it at best ethically neutral as our core business. And then we're going to, you know, write a check on the side to a charity, or just make sure that we're not, you know, polluting the water too much while we're doing it, or, you know, like, you know, make sure that, you know, we're treating our employees halfway decently. That is a very low bar in 2023.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. So let's go back. Let's dig in a little bit here. So Activated, can you elaborate on what you do when you come to people and you say, okay, we need to activate your brand to be purpose-driven?
Yeah. And so the first important point is that you can't activate your brand. You can activate your company, right? And this is where people get it wrong, right? There's all this conversation around purpose-driven brands, right? As if you could just do it as a marketing exercise. A real purpose, an authentic purpose, has to be the true communication of who you really are as a company. Look, I don't want to pick on too many people, but let's take a company like Unilever, right? And I have a lot of respect for Unilever, and I buy their products, right? And I have a 15-year-old daughter, so I love the fact that they have a real Dove, or a real beauty campaign for Dove, right? That is all about saying you should accept, you know, what your body looks like and who you are. I think that's great. I would be far more behind what Dove is saying to my daughter, if not right down the hall in the exact same business, right? The people who work on Axe body spray are telling my son that they should view every woman based on their looks, right? And using Axe body spray will get them in bed faster, right? And in an age of extreme transparency, you can't just fake it. Right, you can't just say one thing outside and be something else on the inside. So you really need to make sure you're building a purpose-driven company, not just purpose-driven brands.
See, now this just folds right into the second one with aligned culture, because if it's not as simple as that and it's not as easy to understand, then the culture just won't grab onto it. Isn't that correct?
That's exactly right. I mean, successful people want to know what winning looks like. They want to know how I should behave when I come in the morning, right? And if I have to constantly change, act one way in one situation and act another way in a different situation, then I'm acting out of integrity, either with myself or with my company. So what we see is that every major organization has a set of values on the wall. Purpose-driven companies actually stick to those values, actually measure their performance against those values, actually fire people when they don't live up and demonstrate those values, right? And it's just about staying true to that, right? That'll keep you on the straight and narrow.
So let's move on to number three then, stakeholder centricity. So how do they receive that? And when I say they, I mean the companies that you're speaking to when you're having this initial meeting with them, and you talk about how we need to communicate and how we need to organize our information or company to shareholders or any stakeholders, really. How does that work?
Right. You know, the good news is that people are finally waking up to this, right? When, you know, Larry Fink at BlackRock is saying, look, we have to do right by a number of different stakeholders. It means we're finally turning the corner on this, and we're paying attention to this in a broad way. If you take a company like REI, right, they are structured for this because their customers are their members, right? So it's kind of one-to-one, right? I love what Yves Chouinard did with Patagonia, right? It just the idea that, like, look, I'm going to take all of my ownership and put it in a trust that is devoted to making sure that the earth is protected so that the earth becomes their biggest shareholder.
Love it.
Now, that, I mean, there's other ways to do it that don't have to be all the way at that level, right? It is a spectrum from here to there, right? But what we found is that there are organizations who, you know, when they're doing right by their partners, you know, through the pandemic, when they did right by their employees through the pandemic, there were organizations, you know, that we're seeing who are just looking differently about this. Like, you know, one of the ones I love is a startup called Look Cinema, right? These are movie theaters, and they're founded by a guy named Brian Schultz. He basically invented the concept of sitting in a movie theater and ordering a fine dining meal while you're watching the movie, right? And he started that with something called Studio Movie Grill. All the way through the pandemic, he did right by all of his investors, but he did right by all of his employees too, right? So in a time when everyone else is complaining that they can't find people now or they can't find staff, people are, like, you know, banging on the door to work with Brian at Look Cinema. Now, Are you saying, like, so did he do right by his employees or did he do right by his shareholders? It turns out that you can do right by both in a way that's better for everybody.
Yeah, I feel like nowadays it's really about transparency, because you can't really hide that many things these days, because it's just eyeballs everywhere, people talking, people texting, people tweeting, people social media. And I feel like that level of transparency that is just innate in our society.
Right.
It's going to show the cracks. If you're not authentic, then it's going to come back. And
that's right.
If you're saying one thing and you're doing another, it's going to come back and bite you. And it can bite you hard.
That's exactly right. And to be fair, like, look who's getting in trouble on these things right now. Like, folks, like, whether it's, you know, Starbucks is a great example of this. But why is Starbucks getting in trouble about this? Starbucks is getting in trouble because they actually have greater values that their people are holding them to in a way that we're not holding other companies to, right? And so this is going to happen. We just expect more from Starbucks, yeah. Right? I've had the chance to sit and listen in on customer service calls, you're right, at Starbucks, right, when somebody had a bad experience. And it is not like a normal company. Let me put it that way, right? It looks less like I was mistreated at this Starbucks. I demand a free latte, right? And that's the standard customer service call. These calls sound more like frustrated fans on AM radio the morning after their team lost, right? Where they're like, come on, guys, we're better than this. This shouldn't have happened, right? There's a greater disappointment because they're Starbucks, damn it. Right. And so, yes, you're going to get held to a higher standard if you espouse a greater purpose, if you articulate greater values that you want to be held to. But the result is also that, you know, when you don't hold up to them, people will come and rally to you in a very different way than I demand a free latte.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think the demand a free latte is kind of the old school way of thinking, like it's just me. And you're talking about
transactional. We, exactly. Yeah.
You're talking
we are in this together.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that I think we've moved into a certain level of marketing and communications that when done right, you are inviting people over to your brand in a relationship capacity. And once you break it into that relationship capacity, you can look at one of our past podcasts on brand love. You're building that bond of love with that person, even though you're a coffee shop or a car manufacturer or whatever. When you build that love relationship with somebody, they really love, then they are on team your brand, whatever that is.
That is exactly right.
And what you're saying is that they see you going to the store, the coffee shop. I am you. You know, we're on the same team. You guys should be better than this. This should be better than this. I shouldn't have this or should have that. That is what you want. Now, what I referenced earlier about it biting you in the butt is that that's when something really goes wrong. And usually it goes wrong two or three times in a row where you're trying to fix something and you're not being authentic. You might be saying one thing and not doing another, you know, or doing another.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, we've seen that, you know, going back to the Starbucks example, that some of the challenges they've had with unionizing in the last, you know, couple of years have come out of the fact of that they felt that there was something broken in that original promise. Which you know brought Howard Schultz back to lead the company, and now with Lakshman taking over, I think a lot of it is about kind of like healing and, kind of reasserting that contract that they have, that we're all in this together.
Just like a quote unquote, I'm using air quotes here, relationship. You know, it is a relationship you're talking about. That all everything you're talking about is just like a relationship.
It very much is a relationship, right? And when it goes well, the level of loyalty that you see is beyond, you know, what you would capture in a customer satisfaction questionnaire or something like that. I mean, look, there was I remember this moment in time. We're going back almost 20 years now, where Apple was really not doing well with their computers. Mm. They had launched a series of laptops that there was some problems with the battery. They were lighting on fire, right?
Oh, right.
And you went, and I just remember that the people online in the chat rooms and stuff who were talking about it, like, oh yeah, this is really bad. These are lighting on fire. I'm going to hold off on this model and wait till next year's model. What? This company is putting out computers that are lighting on fire, and so you're just going to hold off till next year's model? Right? that's an entirely different level of commitment.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think it's like you're this relationship building. It's like you're building an army of people that are fighting for your brand.
Yeah. It's your tribe, and they're going to hold you to it, and they're going to call out when you're being inconsistent, right? But they still love you, and they'll stick by you.
Yeah, but the thing is they are your tribe members that are out there fighting for you, because I remember that time as well. And I remember people arguing in chat windows, talking about, yeah, but, you know, it's probably just their manufacturer, whoever's supporting them, and it's not their fault. And people are just arguing on behalf of Apple, sticking up for Apple's brand. And I was just sitting there watching it because I wasn't logged into the system. And I was just going, wow, this is really interesting, like on a psychological level. Like, what's going on here? Like,
look, sports fans on AM radio. That's exactly what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You nailed it. So, you know, what we just talked about is, you know, broadening your stakeholder base or even your shareholder, because nowadays everybody can be a stakeholder or a shareholder in any company. And what we're talking about does extend and broaden your stakeholder, shareholder base, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, right? Which means that you have to change your management techniques, right? Which means that you actually have to develop leaders who can think beyond just, it's all about me, 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 beyond even it's about we or us, to it's about all of us, everybody that we have to do right by. And that is hard because most companies are not set up for doing that kind of leadership development, which is exactly why the fourth factor that we look at is next level leadership. Are you building an engine for developing leaders from me to we to everyone to all of us?
That just goes right into the fourth item, the characteristic that you mentioned earlier, next level leadership. And I have a sticking point with this because I have seen many different companies, they don't really provide a mentorship program. They might say they have one, but it doesn't really work that well. But it's that next level leadership, bringing leadership up. We have a client that is in facility maintenance. They just make sure the brands look good in their retail and restaurants and their offices and stuff like that across the United States. But their mission statement is to create tomorrow's leaders.
Right.
And I just, when I read that, I was like, man, this is a client I want to have for my company, because they get it. They actually get it. So can you talk to some of the things that, some of the hurdles that people have to overcome in this area? Because I feel like it's just sorely misunderstood and not really well managed.
Yeah, it is an incredible challenge for companies in the 21st century to build next level leaders, because what a leader looks like now is wildly different from what it did 25 years ago. You have to lead with vulnerability. You have to be far more strategic in your thinking. You have to influence, not just command and control. And so there's a lot of obstacles that get in the way of that. One of the biggest, quite honestly, is time. Leaders have to make time to mentor folks around them. I have never seen a better example of this than Reed Hastings, the up until 5 seconds ago was the CEO or co-CEO of Netflix, and he just announced that he's stepping down. But Reed would spend time. I mean, he has, and I apologize, I won't get the numbers right, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 or 150 VPs across the company. And Reed makes sure that he spends an hour talking individually to each of those vice presidents at least once a quarter, right? Checking in with them and talking about culture, talking about values, talking about strategy and where they're going. As if that wasn't amazing enough, he has another 500 directors or so underneath those VPs. And he spends a half an hour with each of them twice a year. And I was blown away by this. You know, I asked the folks at Netflix, how does he have time for this? And the answer he gives is, well, look, if I spend time with that, if I spend time talking about culture and leadership with these folks, I don't have to be in all these other meetings, because I know I can count on that they'll make great decisions without me in the room. So I actually have plenty of time for it. So the biggest issue is time, right? But there's a conceptual barrier that we have to break through too.
Right. What is that conceptual barrier? What is it?
You know, it's the idea that there's good people and bad people. There's low performers and high performers. There's people who get it and don't get it. You know, we've known for a while now that, you know, you need to have a growth mindset about talent, about people. And yet we continue to put people in boxes of good and bad, right? This is something that you see it in our education system. You know, my daughter is 15 now. 10 years ago, we were looking for a school to put her in here in the Bay Area. And we just checked out a few private schools. And they all told us the same answer. They said, well, we only accept gifted children. And my immediate reaction was, well, if you're so good, make my child gifted, right? Isn't that the point of a great education? And so you have to bring that same kind of mindset to your team, right? You have to say, like, what do I do to actually see that growth potential in all of these folks? So sure, time is a clear problem, but Reed Hastings seems to have figured that out. So maybe the rest of us can too. But even beyond that, it's our own mindset about what people are capable of.
I think that's great. I love the part about what people are capable of, because I agree with you about the time issue. That we've mentioned that before in previous podcasts, where time is the issue. And the way I see it is, you know, we're so inundated with so many responsibilities in our leadership title that they don't really think about A, mentoring, B, just connecting and resonating, like, what's going on in your world? What do you need to help with? What can I do for you? What can I help you with? That simple question or conversation is just bygones. It's the old way of doing business that's forgotten. It's like a forgotten talent. And it's not a hard one. It's just, you know, a great leader, you know, listens and talks and has a, you know, two-way conversation with their people as opposed to a boss. And I know you've probably seen that video that's gone, you know, viral online, where it's, you know, all these coyotes and wolves around the water, and then there's the boss drinking all the water. And then a leader goes over, opens a new hole in the water, and then all the other coyotes and wolves go over there and they drink from that, and everybody's happy. That's what I feel like the mentality is. It's like a boss is just like barking orders, and a leader leads, shows, you know, people opportunities and new challenges that they can overcome. So, you know, speaking of time, what about attention? Like, people with their attention, how does that work into, next level leadership?
Yeah, well, you know, attention means that you're actually not just putting in the minutes, right? But you're actually bringing your presence there and noticing and seeing what's happening, right? Too many of us are distracted. We're multitasking. We're spending time on five different things at the same time. Or even I'm talking to you, and even if I'm not checking my phone at the same time, am I actually paying attention to what you're saying and noticing, you know, what's happening, or am I caught up in my own brain? This is why it's the rise of mindfulness, kind of as a counter trend to all of the information overload we have, right? And it's a question of, like, so which do you want to win? Do you want to live in a world that is dominated by life as TikTok scrolling, right? or life as be here right now? It is unclear which one's going to win in our society.
It is. You know, last year I turned off all my notifications of everything, and I was blown away at how much time I got back and just peace of mind. It was like a stressor that I didn't know that was there was just gone. And the days were easier. There was less stress. And it just, like I said, it made me feel like I had more time. And it goes back to what you said about so many things coming at us.
You know, one of the key skills of a leader is rapid pattern identification. And you're not going to notice things. You're not going to see those patterns, right? If you're not paying attention.
I love that. I love that. That is so awesome. You know, okay, the fifth one that you mentioned is really near and dear to my heart, because I feel like we're failing in this so heavily, and that's the future-focused aspect. When companies are coming to you and you get into this conversation, I feel like we are so short-sighted. Everything's like, what are you going to do next quarter? Or, you know, what did you do this quarter? It's quarter, 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 quarter. No long-term thinking. It's like that rational thinking of long-term thinking is just, it's gone, not present, not really functioning very well. How do you see it?
That's absolutely true. When you look at every study as to why really great companies fail, right? Over and over, the answer comes up, they miss the future. right? They're doing a really great job on their current business, and they're not paying attention to the business that's right around the corner, right? Or they're not paying attention to the big opportunity that is going to be there. You know, Larry Page, the, you know, co-founder of Google, you know, he talks about this all the time because he, you know, he doesn't want to miss the future, right? He needs to stay ahead of it. And that is incredibly hard for a leader, because if you're truly being future focused and you're spending time on it, it's going to feel horrible. It's going to feel lousy. He talks about this. You know, Larry would say, like, you know, what is their core business? Their core business, right, is advertising funded search, right? Mm-hmm. And he would spend every Friday afternoon. So let's take it as 1/10 of his week. Right, he'd spend every Friday afternoon hanging out with this, you know, this little mobile operating system acquisition called Android that they had bought, right, and growing it. And Larry talks about, you know, he said, I just felt like I felt so guilty that I was spending my time on that. Should I be spending more time on search? He's like, you know, I'm so glad I did that, because it turns out that that mobile operating system was part of the future of Google.
Exactly.
It's the kind of thing where if you're not feeling guilty about how much time you're spending thinking about the future, you're probably not doing it enough.
Nicely said. I often wonder about companies that are so short-sighted, or they're not looking forward. They miss business segment opportunities, something maybe not as big as a whole Android phone market, but even just smaller opportunities for growth.
You know, too many companies, they kill off things too early in their gestation period. They don't let it grow. They don't let it figure out. Jeff Bezos said this years ago, right? He said, you know, the biggest advantage that Amazon has is time, because they give, you know, their teams 7 years to figure something out, while most people, you know, give 18 months tops.
Yeah, Amazon does a lot of very interesting things from the design and communication side with their online website that is, it's all time associated. Like when they want to change something on the website, sometimes they'll say, okay, to make this change, it's going to be really hard for people. So they'll do iterations to that change. So if they're going to move a button from here to here, it might be up at the top, and then it'll be down in the middle, and then down closer to the bottom, and then it'll be at the bottom, you know, over like an 8-month window, because they don't want to lose anybody's attention. They don't want to rewrite, you know, the user experience.
Yeah, it is so hard. It breaks our brain, right? I mean, we've done some research on this at Jump, and the neuroscience on it is frightening, right? Which is that about 16% of us, 16% of human beings, are truly future focused. That when you talk about, here's what the world's going to look like in 5 years, and here's what we need to do, and here is how, you know, pick it, the ChatGPT or its successor, or GPT-5 is going to disrupt our business, right? About 16% of human beings say, yeah, you're right, we need to get going on it. Another 14% are the other end of the bell curve. They're the tail. They're the past focused people. They're the ones who say, you know what, Taylor, taxi cabs will never go away. Uber is just a blip. Or sure, Airbnb, but you know how many people stayed in a Marriott last night, right? And because they're going based on what they've experienced, you know, in their life in the past. But 70% of us, most of the people in the center of the bell curve, are present focused. And they're the people who, when you show them that the world is going to change, they say, you're right, it's going to change, but we need to focus on this quarter. We need to focus on right now. And that is the worst of all three options, right? If you think about it, with the past focused people, at least you can disprove them. With the present focused people, you're talking like the future focused people, but acting like the past focused people. It's like you've accepted the premise that the world is changing, but you're driving over the cliff anyway. And that's not something that is, just a habit. That is part of your brain's wiring. And you can change it. Neuroplasticity is a beautiful thing. You can rewire your brain. Again, yep. I believe in growth and the potential of people. But you just got to start off recognizing and acknowledging that most of us are present focused.
Okay, you just brought the whole circle back to the beginning again. when we talk about these people that are present focused, these are the people that I feel like this podcast is for. You know, even though they're business leaders or executives or officers of companies, this podcast is for them to help them understand how purpose-driven companies is more than just a marketing or advertising campaign. It's a way of doing business through and through. And it is tested now that it is a business model of better success on all fronts.
That's exactly right. And the reality is we don't have a choice in this. People aren't just buying things anymore. They're buying into things. That makes life incredibly hard for most companies. It's a lot more difficult. We will spend time with the company and they'll say, we really want to identify our purpose and we want to go forward. And we'll tell them, well, look, first of all, are you just looking for something to put up on the wall, or are you truly looking to be purpose driven? Right. And because if it's the former, then, you know, maybe not, we're not the folks to work with you on this, going down this journey. But then, you know, it's going to be really hard. Are you sure you want to do this? And even if you're successful, you will be pilloried. You will be, you know, people will point out every moment of unintended hypocrisy where you didn't live up to your own aspirations, right? That's what you're signing up for, right? And yet, if you don't do that, then it means that maybe what you spend all day doing in your job is maybe less compelling and less enriching and less meaningful even to yourself.
Yeah, yourself, your employees, the people that use your product, the people that build and make your product. You know, this just makes me feel like we're getting to a point, we're going to get to this point somewhere where either you are helping people, planet, and profit, or you're hurting them. You know, literally not you're not, when doing nothing can be hurting them. And I feel like that needs to be addressed.
That's exactly right. Now, to be fair, there's a lot of problems in this world. And so, you know, different organizations need to stand up and speak to their part of the problem. Right? Jump is all about learning and growth. Patagonia, right, is all about, you know, like, what are we doing, you know, to the environment? My dear friends at Target know, you know, like, what they're about is to help all families discover the joy of everyday life, right? And there's something in that. So there are many, many things that we need to do to put our species on the right path. You don't have to take it all on. You just have to take on the thing that is most compelling and that you are most competent to do something about.
So I have to ask my magic wand question to you. This is a great last question. If you had a magic wand and you could just wave it across all the businesses across the world, what is the one thing you wish that they would start doing today?
Wow, that is a fantastic question. I think that this kind of shift, right, to where the work that we do matters, right, and has an impact and has a change, is a natural human development. So I would say that if I waved a magic wand, it would lack probably the most important thing in all of this, which is compassion. Right. It would be like looking and saying, like, you know, I have a class of fourth graders. If I could wave a magic wand, would you turn them into sixth graders? I'm like, no, because they're great as they are and they're going to get there.
Yeah. Right. So, good point. Good analogy. Right?
And so I don't know. Like, we're just on this journey. The only thing I worry about is time. Will we develop? Will we get there faster than our problems overtake us?
Right? Yeah, I feel the same.
Most problems in our society are human created, right? Yeah, the invasion of Ukraine is a man-made problem, literally one man-made problem. Even the pandemic is a human created problem. Even if you don't believe that, you know, some people believe that COVID was made in a lab, let's leave that aside. Let's even assume that it's a natural occurring phenomenon. Sure, COVID is not human created, but the pandemic was human created because the pandemic was about how we responded to it and how we reacted and what we did and how we taught ourselves things.
Right. So how can our listeners reach out to you and learn more about what you guys are doing?
So there's two things that I'd point out, which is if you're interested in thinking about how to really become a purpose-driven company, you know, definitely check out jumpassociates.com. But if you're already part of this conversation, you really need to get involved in Conscious Capitalism. It's an organization that I love. They have been thinking about what it means to be a purpose-driven company since 2007, years before most of us, you know, thought about this as something that we should be focused on. So check out consciouscapitalism.org.
Yeah, and I've read the book, Conscious Capitalism, and it was a great read. I loved every minute of it. It's really, really well done. Dave, thank you so much for being on the show today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I could literally talk about this for hours, as you know. So again, thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks, Taylor. It was my pleasure.
Awesome. Over and out, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to The Triple Bottom Line. Your host, Taylor Martin, is founder and chief creative of Design Positive, a strategic branding and accessibility agency. Interested in being interviewed on our podcast? Then visit designpositive.co and fill out our contact form. If you enjoyed today's podcast, we would appreciate a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever provider you're logging in from. This podcast is prepared by Design Positive and is not associated with any other entity. We look forward to having you back for another installment of The Triple Bottom Line.